What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Bailey along with Matt Peck. Remember, we are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Download the Dash Radio app, head to dashradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. That's changed differently from our other page, so make sure you go like facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, not Locked On Bulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us. Make sure to follow Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well, and our friends over at Locked On Bears. Locked On Bears is your number one place for Bears content, for the Bears shows. And after yesterday's disappointing loss in the Bears, that'll definitely be an episode you want to check out. But what's up and what's going on, Matt? How was your weekend?
It was all right, Jordan. I don't know about you. I was banking on Connor Barth missing that field goal to seal the Bears' defeat on Sunday. Glad to hear that Monday morning he has already been released and replaced by Cairo Santos, that old Chiefs kicker who's coming back from his injury from earlier this season. So another downer week for the Bears, but hey, that means another week and another loss towards a higher draft pick in the upcoming NFL draft. So, Chicago fans, I know it's tough sledding out there right now, but think positively, whether it's Bears or Bulls, think positive.
Yeah, it's a really tough time if you're like me, who's a Bulls fan, a Bears fan, and also a White Sox fan. So now pretty much the entire year is just looking forward to a draft or looking forward to part of a rebuild, which is, it gets kind of depressing after a while, but at least there is some hope with the White Sox. And if you're a Cubs fan, well, at least you got the Cubs. So, but yeah, the whole entire rebuild, from whether it's you watching on Sunday nights or watching the Bulls over the weekend, we've got a packed show for you. So we want to talk about these two games that happened over the weekend, Friday and Sunday night, one against the Hornets and against the Suns as well. I had a little bit of an anxiety attack on Friday, and I'll get into that and why, specifically towards the Bulls and kind of looking at their future as far as a rebuild. We also want to jump into this Jerian Grant and Chris Dunn battle, as well as some really good tidbits from Stacey King over the weekend. I don't know if you're somebody who watches and listens in on TV regularly, but if you do and you caught what Stacey King was saying over the past two games, it'll kind of raise your eyebrows a little bit, and it's definitely interesting. So first, let's jump into this Hornets game, Matt. Friday night, Hornets were on a five-game losing streak. Bulls were coming in with pretty much the same thing. Bulls, Not as bad as what we saw earlier in that week. That's all I can say. And they pulled out the win 123-120.
It was nice to see. It was the first start for Denzel Valentine since, I believe, the fourth game of the season. Coming in there, you know, as Fred Hoiberg continues to shovel this rotation around in the absence of David Nwaba, in the ongoing absence of Zach LaVine. So he had Grant and Holiday in the backcourt and gave Valentine the start at the three. And Valentine had probably his best game of the season, 18 points, 6 assists, chipped in 5 rebounds, 4 of 7 from downtown. We've talked a lot on this show thus far this season about what Valentine will be. It was nice to see him having that kind of game in a winning effort. But really, to me, that win against Charlotte was, despite Holiday leading the team with 27 points on 10 of 15, it was about Dunn's performance off the bench. 22 points, a season high for him, I believe a career high for him. 10 of 16, chipping in 7 dimes, 5 assists, 3 steals, and just 1 turnover. Because that's been the key, right, for Dunn all season long, as he's trying to win this starting point guard's job from Jerian Grant. Can he facilitate and create more offensive opportunities for this team than Grant while cutting down on those turnovers? He took a backslide in the turnover department against the Suns, and we can get to that game later. But against Charlotte, probably the best we've seen from Dunn all season.
Yeah, and you look at the Bulls starting lineup, and this is the first time the Bulls this season, 4 out of the 5 or 5 out of the 5 guys in your starting lineup in their plus minus are in the plus at the end of the game. The only guy on Friday night that wasn't was Jerian Grant, and he was a minus 4. Everybody else was plus. And you look at Chris Dunn too, as far as plus minus, he was a plus 8 off the bench. So yeah, Chris Dunn and Jerian Grant kind of battling it out here over these past two games, and it's kind of getting a little bit more mysterious as to why Jerian Grant still is getting the start over Chris Dunn. We can kind of dive into that. The other thing that I had to take away from this game was the win. As far as a rebuild goes, I know you want to lose as many games as possible, but I felt like this win was much needed just for the sanity of Fred Hoiberg. I mean, after the blowout, the destruction of his team he saw over the two games prior to that against San Antonio and then Oklahoma City, I mean, I think this was just a win for Fred's sanity at this point, and you sort of needed that at this point with young guys in the locker room and everything that's gone on just at the first 13 games of this season. This was one that I think Fred needed the most.
You definitely feel bad for Fred, and you know whether or not he is proving himself thus far in year three as a head coach in the NBA. You know that is a long and ongoing discussion. But sometimes you just need a win in these rebuilding seasons. And you know the Bulls had dropped what I believe 5 or 6 straight coming into that game on Friday night. So it's nice to end those losing streaks that start to grow. You never want to have those losing streaks that reach double digits because they can just be so demoralizing. And a lot of those players can kind of become numb to the fact that they're such a bad team. And then that goes into what Fred has talked about a lot already this season, which is effort. And the fact that the Bulls have very minimal room for error when it comes to putting legitimate efforts on the court every night. So when you do get a rare win like this in a rebuilding season, I think it is good not only for the sanity of Fred Hoiberg, but for the sanity of all of his players in that locker room to say, like, yeah, I mean, if we play well and if we play smart for the most part, for most of a 48-minute game, there are some teams in this league that we can compete against. Some teams in the NBA right now obviously are leagues above who this Bulls team is in year one of a rebuild. But some nights, if they play smart and everyone plays to the height of their ability, they can get wins, and they need to remind themselves of that every once in a while.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, too. You put two bad teams on the floor on a Friday night for the NBA, and it turns out to be, as much as you want to say it was kind of a disaster, but it was still a relatively entertaining game, and at that point, that's what we're here for. If you're tuning into a Bulls game, you're not tuning in to watch a playoff team or a team that's trying to compete for a championship. You're hoping to watch a little bit of development and be entertained for the most part, and that's what you got on Friday night. And man, I don't know about you, but I've always been a big Kemba Walker fan, and he dropped 47 on the Bulls like it was nothing. And he cooked up every point guard and every guy that tried to defend him. He cooked them. So getting a chance to just see some of these other guys around the league and some of the other top talent that has been taken in drafts by tanking teams in the past, Kemba Walker's been one of my favorites, and I feel like there's still this ongoing discussion whether he is, you know, a legitimate star in the NBA, or is he borderline? Is he just below that? Is he underrated? Dropping 47 on a terrible Bulls team, though, if you were at the United Center on Friday night, at least you got to see that, and you got to bring home a Bulls win.
All credit in the world to Kemba Walker. 17 of 27, including 5 of 9 from downtown in that game. Only one turnover in 38 minutes. I mean, he is a stud. He's a star player. I think Kemba Walker gets overlooked a lot when people talk about, you know, who are the best point guards in the league, who are the best scoring, facilitating point guards. And I think mostly it's just because of the fact that Kemba's never really had a great supporting cast around him. Like, when's the last time the Charlotte Hornets were relevant in the NBA other than maybe a first-round playoff exit? I think it's unfortunate because he deserves a lot more credit than he gets. And you saw in that game against the Bulls on Friday night, he's capable of having those Russell Westbrook games where he just takes over offensively and scores at will. The Bulls, you know, we talked in a recent episode about how the Bulls are surprisingly better than expected on the defensive end thus far. And that might change over the course of a full 82-game season, but he sure as hell made the Bulls look like they were trying to play defense on skates on Friday.
Before I jump into why I had a slight Bulls anxiety attack, I want to remind all Bulls fans out there that you still have roughly about 12 hours or so if you're listening to this on Monday night. You have about 12 hours or so to enter the Lowry Marketing jersey giveaway. So there's three ways to do that. You can go to Twitter, retweet, favorite the tweet with the picture of Lowry Marketing and the rules of the contest. You retweet, you favorite that, and you follow us on Twitter, you're automatically entered. You don't like using Twitter? Go to Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Like our picture there, like the page, you're automatically subscribed to. You have a chance to win the Lowry Marketing jersey. And then you can also email us at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Send us a screenshot of you subscribing to the show and you'll have triple the chance to win. So that's three times as many entries as going to Facebook and Twitter. You can do all three. You can do one. You can do two out of the three. It's up to you. The more times you do it, the more ways you do it, the more chance you'll have to win. So you got about 12 hours or so to jump in on that contest. And we'll be announcing that on tomorrow's show, announcing the winner of the Lowry Marketing jersey. So stay tuned for that. All right. So Matt, you want to know why, as I was scrolling through Twitter and watching this Hornets Bulls game on Friday, I had a few drinks in me, and I'm not going to lie, I saw this tweet pop up in front of me, and it listed every Hornets player that was taken in the first round since 2011. And so basically putting the bar at where the Hornets started and at their rebuild, their realistic rebuild, because what the Bobcats were that wasn't even an NBA team. So
I already just purposefully forget that the Charlotte Bobcats were ever a thing. And I try to cut them some slack because, you know, this is MJ's organization, has been for a long time. But, I mean, come on. The Bobcats, that was never going to catch on. I'm glad that they're back to being the Hornets.
Well, first of all, in the interest of accuracy, let's put it plain and simple. They were the worst team in NBA history. Can we get that out the way right now?
That might be debatable.
It's not debatable. It's not debatable.
So am I. So going into 2011, I'm just going to set the bar there as really the revamp of this now Hornets team. They're in their sixth year in the rebuild. So in 2011, they took Kemba Walker at number 9. They took Tobias Harris at number 19. 2012, they took Michael Kidd-Gilchrist at number 2 overall. They took, in 2013, Cody Zeller at number 4 overall. 2014, they took Noah Vonleh at number 9 and Shabazz Napier, who they shipped off to Miami, at number 24. 2015, they took Frank Kaminsky at number 9. 2016, they sent their pick at number 22 to Sacramento. That ended up being Malachi Richardson. And then now 2017, Malik Monk at number 10. You want to know what my biggest concern out of all of that was?
Yeah, what's that?
There is not one guy on that board that you can consider a superstar in the NBA right now. And that concerns me. I mean, being a team that rebuilds, and looking at a team like the Hornets, or looking at a team like the Suns or the Lakers, anybody that's been in a significant rebuild for 4 or 5 years, I look at them and I look at these rosters and I say to myself, there is a lot more teams in the NBA that have been rebuilding for a long time and haven't hit on one player as far as a superstar. There are the outliers. I mean, the 76ers look like they're stacked. And you've got a couple other teams.
I mean, yeah, the duo of Simmons and Embiid in years to come, if both of them stay healthy. And you're talking about teams that have been rebuilding for 4 or 5 plus years. Definitely Philadelphia fits into that category. That might be a hit. And I know that Sixers fans for a long time were very wary about whether or not that was going to pan out. But, I mean, hashtag trust the process. I think everybody in Philly is on board. But as you said, that's an example of one of many, maybe the outlier for teams that have been trying to rebuild. And the fact that a lot of those teams that have been rebuilding, quote unquote, for years are still basement-dwelling teams.
It's scary, too, to think about that. Your guy that, like we just talked about, the guy that I could point to that says probably is the most underrated player and a guy that is kind of, I don't know, seesawing on the line of superstardom is Kemba Walker, and you took him all the way in 2011. That's your core piece. Other than that, the guys that surprised me the most are the guys like Cody Zeller, and I'm an Indiana alum, and Cody Zeller at number 4 hasn't exactly panned out for the Hornets the way they probably wanted them to. Noah Vonleh, again, Indiana guy. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist at number 2. I think that's the biggest killer here, is like, you took a guy at number 2 overall, and he isn't anywhere near where they thought he'd be, what, his fifth season into this rebuild. So if you take a screenshot and you take a look at what the Hornets have done, maybe some of the things that Suns have done and the Lakers have done, there's a lot more teams that are rebuilding and not hitting on players. Does that concern you with the front office that the Bulls now have, incorporating all the misses that some of these other front offices with competent GMs and competent people running their front office haven't hit on players? And now you got Garpax running this rebuild and having the possibility of it looking like that 5-6 years down the road?
I mean, yeah, of course it concerns me. I don't know if I draw a huge correlation between other rebuilding teams missing on some of their lottery level first round picks and what the Bulls have done in recent years. It's still a concern. Like, am I worried that John Paxson and Gar Foreman are going to screw up what will likely be a top five pick in next year's draft? Yeah, of course that concern is there, because you look at their recent track record and there's not a whole lot of confidence in the picks that they've made. But again, I don't necessarily look at other rebuilding teams whose lottery picks over the, you know, the span of a 4 or 5 year rebuild haven't panned out. It doesn't create any higher level of anxiety for me, because really it's already there. It's already there with Gar and Pax leading the way. And you can give them credit, because that, and I was chatting with Casey Johnson about this over the weekend, when it comes to like, what will it take for this front office to ever be replaced? And he was citing to me the fact that, yeah, they've missed on recent draft picks, but the Reinsdorf family still believes that those two guys are the ones to get it done, because they really appreciated the job they did in that rebuild back starting in 2003 when Paxson took over for Jerry Krause, and the failed rebuild that Krause tried to build after the dynasty. And it was, you know, hits on guys like Kirk Heinrich and Luol Deng and Chris Duhon and all those players that and Ben Gordon, the baby Bulls team that was really lovable and adored in the city of Chicago. They still get credit for that, which to me, I mean, come on, how long are you going to give them credit for that compared to recent misses? But absolutely, there have been a hell of a lot more misses than hit. What was the last bona fide hit? Jimmy Butler? 2011, just like Kemba Walker. What are we talking about right now? Yeah, it's a concern.
And that makes me want to throw up when we're resorting to the fact that they're still getting credit for a team that was entertaining at best? It wasn't entertaining the idea of a championship at all after that. And that's what we're like, is that where we're setting the bar as far as this rebuild is? Is that what the front office is doing as far as looking at a rebuild and how they can reshape and reform this team on the court? Is that the bar? Because that's pretty damn pathetic for a team that's won 6 championships, you know, and had the best player to ever step on a court, play for your team, and then you're just going to sit back and ride the money train and not care about the product that you put on the court. That aggravates me the most. But going back to what I was talking about with the actual draft and the draft picks, and why I was having like this sort of a Bulls anxiety attack, is because it occurs to me now, and I don't know why this is just hitting me now. Maybe it's because the Bulls are now a rebuilding team and we haven't been in this situation before in a long time. So there's a lot of players that miss. There's a lot of teams that miss on good players as well. And the combination of that plus adding the incompetence of the front office and Gar and Pax and what they've done over the last 5 years, that has my mind blowing up at this point, because I'm looking at what the Bobcats/Hornets, whatever you want to call them, what they did in 2013 and 2012. Guys that they took and then the guys that they missed on. 2013 is going to probably go down as one of the worst NBA drafts in probably 2 decades. Okay, I'll give them that. I'll pass that on Cody Zeller taking them at number 4. But the 2012 draft, listen to the guys that they missed on. They took Michael Carter-Williams over Bradley Beal, Dion Waiters, Damian Lillard, Harrison Barnes, Andre Drummond. That was just in the top 10. You missed on those guys. So if you've got a front office like Gar Pax running a rebuild, you expect them to hit on some of these players, and they are so lucky that this 2018 NBA draft pretty much has a guarantee of 5 guys, that those top 5 guys are going to be something. It's as close to a guarantee as it has been in a really long time. So for me, the anxiety attack of looking at other teams around the league and saying, wow, they're in the 6th or 7th year of the rebuild, and that's what they have on the court? Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can be concerned. At the same time, you just mentioned it, like, assuming the Bulls don't screw up, the fact that they're supposed to be losing a lot of games this season, and so far they're, you know, they're on pace. What are they, 3-11 right now? Like, they are going to be one of the worst teams in the league, and they're most likely, unless they get screwed by ping pong balls, going to have a top five pick. And you talk about those guys, Michael Porter, DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, the international prospect Luka Doncic, and Mohamed Bamba. Like, those five guys, to me, are all no-brainer. They will help your franchise. They can all have all-star ceiling potentials in the NBA. So you pick one that you think is the best fit for what your team has right now and what your team needs, and you move forward and you hope that they pan out and you hope that they're not a bust. And yes, it's a concern that there have been so many misses by this front office recently, but at some point, I mean, you just have to accept the fact that this is a crapshoot. Draft picks, whether you're talking NBA, NFL, hockey, whatever. Draft picks, as far as production versus potential and where they are drafted, it's a crapshoot.
Doesn't it make your mind, though, explode again for the fact that even though it is a crapshoot, and like you said, you know, there's guys that pan out that originally were marked or overlooked by scouts, but wouldn't you want to put yourself in the best position to evaluate the talent that's coming in the future as far as a rebuild, considering this is the first time the Bulls have gone through a full rebuild in what I would say about a decade, right after Jordan, maybe a little longer than that. The fact that the Bulls have such a small scouting team too. And I look at Michael Reinsdorf and Jerry, who own this team, and like, look at this team. And it's like, the way the NBA is going and what John Paxson was doing 10 years ago might have worked when he was hitting on guys like you had brought up, Kirk Heinrich, Chris Duhon, Luol Deng, whoever it was. The NBA has changed so much in a decade, and the fact that the front office or the ownership of the Bulls is hoping that John Paxson and Gar Forman will somehow all of a sudden figure out how to miraculously make a team, build a team from nothing after they couldn't do anything with a bunch of talent, concerns me as well. And it's just like, it blows my mind that the Bulls can continue doing this and continue leading fans down the road of, yeah, we're rebuilding, yeah, this is what we want to do, but yet then they contradict themselves by having the tiniest scouting team in the entire NBA. Like, I just don't understand how that makes any sense. And I know it's leading us into a tangent of things, but it just piles on when you start to think about the future of the Bulls in terms of the next couple of years, or maybe even 5 years down the line.
And I know we had a conversation kind of in that light recently when talking about the fact that our rookie this year, Lauri Markkanen, thus far looks to be a very good pick, and you saying like, oh, come on, like, you can't give the front office credit, like, they barely scouted the guy, they just like saw him as a, you know, number seven in a lot of mock drafts, and when they traded up to seven they figured they should pick him. And I was kind of not necessarily defending the front office, but just sort of playing devil's advocate, saying, well, look, the Bulls needed a stretch four better than Nico and or Bobby for Fred Hoiberg's offense. Markkanen projected to be a top 10 draft pick, and they took that guy, and so far he looks good. So, you know, we're not throwing Gar Paxson a parade for the fact that thus far Markkanen looks like a strong pick. At the same time, yeah, okay, credit where it's due. This one so far looks like a better first-round pick than recent first-round picks. So moving forward, hoping that you're looking at a top-five pick in the 2018 draft, again, when it's that upper echelon of picks, you kind of hope that it's a no-brainer, and you kind of hope that that NBA star potential of those top 3 to 5 guys is just kind of gonna pan out for you. But we just have to play the waiting game, and that's probably the most obnoxious, anxious part about starting a brand new rebuild right now. You know, not even 15 games into year one of a rebuild, and we're all kind of sitting here being like, so can we take this 2018 draft and just make it happen already? I'm ready. I'm ready for it. We don't need to watch the Bulls go, you know, 10 and 72, 20 and 62 maybe. Let's just do the draft.
I got one more thing too from this. Is I got kind of sad when I had to Google the 2012 NBA draft, because then I scrolled down to where the Bulls picked, And you know, if you're a Bulls fan at all, you know who the Bulls took in 2012, right?
29th pick overall, and there is Marcus Teague on the board. So when you saw him fall, are you saying to yourself, wow, this is too good to be true?
Well, we were excited about it. And obviously, you know, I know it's the old cliche and everybody says we didn't expect him to be there, but we truly didn't expect him to be there. And when he was there, we were excited about it. We obviously feel he can be a real asset to us. We think he's a value pick.
And then you know who they also missed on, too, and more specifically, who Tom Thibodeau wanted them to pick at number 29.
I'm pretty sure he's a two-time champion with the Golden State Warriors. Arguably, like the best behind LeBron, best five player, you know, five position player in the NBA. Draymond, defensive player of the year. Draymond.
Yeah. It makes me sad every time I have to look this up. Look up the 2012 NBA draft. It just keeps getting worse. So
it's a pretty haunting memory.
So well, let's move on to the Suns game now. Here, break down further what some of these positional matchups and I guess rotation minutes are more so looking like nowadays, with Paul Zipser over the past weekend not getting any. Like, he got 7 seconds in the Hornets game at the end of the game or at the end of the first half, and then he got did not play coach's decision against the Suns on Sunday night. So with the Grant and Dunn battle and also with Paul Zipser kind of combining all of this, is this Fred's way of saying kind of, all right, here is sort of what John Paxson and Gar Forman asked of me last season when he wanted more defined rotations and guys playing significant minutes that deserve significant minutes. As far as the Grant and Dunn battle goes, why is Chris Dunn not starting? Why does he continue coming off the bench when it's clear now, even in 14 games, like I've said at the beginning of the season, that Jerian Grant is just, he can't facilitate an offense and he's not a starting point guard?
No. And I mean, as we're going to talk about Bulls and Suns here, lost what was really a very winnable game against a so-so Suns team. You look at Jerian Grant's box score. My God. 2 points on 1 of 5 shooting, 0 of 2 from downtown, 2 boards, 2 assists, a steal, 2 turnovers in 21 minutes. And what have we been talking about as the one advantage that Grant has over Dunn thus far? It is taking care of the ball and having a better assist-to-turnover ratio. Well, we did see Dunn turn the ball over 4 more times, as I alluded to earlier, against the Suns on Sunday. So he still needs to work on that. Particularly, there was that one really bad turnover Dunn had when this was still like a 2-possession game with 1.5 minutes left. That behind-the-back pass that just sailed out of bounds to nobody. When he had Valentine and Markkanen, two of this team's best 3-point shooters, to his right. If all he needed to do was swing it, Denzel could have taken a shot or swung it, made the extra pass to Markkanen, and the Bulls could have hit a 3 to make it a 1-point game. Dunn stupidly throws the, you know, tries to make a behind-the-back pass to nobody, goes into the, you know, the courtside seats. That was bad. But other than that, Chris Dunn is proving game by game to be a better overall weapon than Jerian Grant on the offensive end, and we all already know that he is a vastly superior player on the defensive end. So I know that we keep hearing Fred Hoiberg say, I like Dunn leading that second unit. We really need him on that second unit. I'm sorry, but if he turns out to be the point guard that you need, or at least the best point guard available for this rebuild, why are you not playing him in the starting lineup with Lauri Markkanen? If Jerian Grant is not a part of the solution and he's not a part of the future, let Dunn and Markkanen get as comfortable playing with each other as possible in a losing season. That is making use of a losing season. It makes no sense to me why Dunn is not
starting. I've got kind of a theory, and I don't know if this is this might just sound crazy, but it kind of makes sense here. So take a ride with me for a second. Think about what Fred Hoiberg is now going to soon start doing if the Bulls play as bad as they did against OKC. And there's going to be outlier nights where they're going to win games like they did on Friday. But for me, taking a look at just the 14 games that Fred Hoiberg has seen Chris Dunn, do you think that there is any possibility that Fred Hoiberg is saying to himself now, I don't think this guy is our point guard of the future, as much as Gar Pax thinks he is? Do you think he has any type of feeling that he's like, I don't want to mess with the chemistry that he's got right now coming off the bench with the second unit. I don't want to mess with the confidence and the composure that he's got coming off the bench. At the same time, I don't see him running with the starters eventually. Maybe there's another solution out there come down the future. So he doesn't want to mess with Chris Dunn's confidence and sort of the structure that he's going. Do you feel like there's any hint of that with him being sort of against letting Chris Dunn start, especially when it's been so clear over the, like, even the last five games, it's been clear that Jerian Grant has no business being the starter on this Bulls team? Do you feel like there's any inclination at all? Because I feel like that there could possibly be some thoughts in Fred Hoiberg's mind, like, hey man, this is what I've seen out of Chris Dunn, and maybe we just don't mess with it. We leave it for right now and let him develop in that way before letting him start and take over games. I don't know.
Maybe. Like, maybe there is some part of Fred Hoiberg who still isn't buying into Dunn being the long-term solution at point guard. And look, throw me into that camp. I agree with Fred Hoiberg, if that's how Hoiberg feels, saying he's unsure if Dunn is the long-term solution at point guard. I know that they made that Butler trade largely because they felt that LaVine and Dunn could both be key pieces to this rebuild. So, as you mentioned, the front office, at least, saw Dunn, who they really wanted in the draft last year.
And the year before that. And, like, since he's been a middle school basketball player.
Yeah, I mean, since he was a four-year player at Providence, they've been obsessed with this kid. Almost traded Butler for him on draft night 2016 to get Dunn. So, obviously the front office wants to believe that Dunn is that guy. Maybe Hoiberg doesn't see it yet. And that's fine if Hoiberg doesn't see it yet, because we've seen flashes from Dunn, but the fact that he still has not taken the starting point guard job from Jerian Grant, who we repeatedly say is about as useful as a poopy flavored lollipop. I mean, like, why? Why? It goes back to my misunderstanding as to why he's not starting, but maybe Hoiberg doesn't see it. But we have also talked in one of last week's shows about the fact that we're excited for this 2018 draft and the fact that the Bulls are hopefully going to have a top five pick, but none of those top five projected lottery guys are point guards.
Right.
None of them are score first point guards. And maybe the Bulls will regret not taking Dennis Smith and taking Markkanen instead. We'll see how those two careers pan out over the course of the next 10, 15 years. Maybe that will be something that comes back to bite the Bulls. Because this 1 year is their chance to get the highest percentage of a number one overall pick before that NBA draft lottery reform comes in 2019, in year two of a rebuild. This is their best shot at getting a franchise-changing player. And none of them are point guards. So right now, Dunn is the guy. Dunn should be the guy until something changes.
That goes back to our last conversation. It's just like, now you have to, not only do you have to put your chips in the basket of Gar-Pax to make a competent pick, and you got to hope the Bulls stay bad enough when LaVine and possibly Mirotić and David Nwaba and some of these other guys come back, and if Robin Lopez is still hanging on this team in the first week of February, like, a lot of it plays factors into how bad the Bulls are going to be too, and whether or not they hang around bad enough to stay at the bottom three. And I still keep holding out this, like, as bad as the Bulls have been this 14 games, like, I gotta imagine dropping Zach LaVine into this roster. And if Nico Mirotić comes back and somehow he's put into the mix, even for a short little bit, I gotta imagine this Bulls team's a little bit better, and they're gonna start beating some of these other teams that are, you know, at the bottom half, bottom quarter of the NBA. Like, to me, that just seems like it makes the most sense. So I'm scared that, like, all of these combinations, we're saying that we have to bank on 2018 is landing a top guy. Like, that's why I'm hoping the Bulls can stay bad all season. And I think that for most Bulls fans, it's the same thing. They want to stay. You want to stay as bad as possible. One last note on Jerian Grant real quick, though. There was specific evidence that Fred Hoiberg saw Jerian Grant make mistakes, and it was caught on video. So I don't know if you were watching it live on Comcast or not, but there was a clip that was taken by Marcus D on Twitter. Shout out to him. He gets a lot of really good clips from Bulls games and from Bears games. He got a grab of where Jerian Grant cut to the right, like he was cutting towards the basket off a pick and roll from, or a pick and pop from Lauri Markkanen. He got the pick off, Lauri Markkanen popped wide open, ready to shoot the three, and Jerry Grant is standing there in a double team, not even looking anywhere near Lauri Markkanen. And you see all three coaches, including Fred Hoiberg, throw their hands up on the bench, sitting on the bench, just shaking their head, throwing their hands up. It was one of the best moments of that Suns Bulls game last night. And I was just like, well, there's your clear evidence right there that Jerry and Grant, like we've been saying, can't facilitate an offense.
No, I mean, you're talking about maybe there's some kind of quasi conspiracy theory going on here when it comes to what Fred Hoiberg is doing with his point guard rotation and him not believing that Dunn is the guy. There's no way in hell that he thinks that Grant is the guy. I mean, that's not possible. That is in no way possible.
Oh, absolutely not.
The visual evidence is piling up, has been piling up since the first game of this season. Jaren Grant is not a team-leading starting point guard. He's not. I feel wishy-washy about him being a reserve point guard, playing a reserve point guard role. He's just not good. Like Happy Gilmore's ex-girlfriend tells him as she's about to ditch his ass, you're just not any good. Jaren Grant is the Happy Gilmore hockey version of a Bulls player in this rebuild right now. He's just not any good. I don't get it. I do not get why he is still starting.
It's minus the trying to cut other players, taking your skate off and trying to cut other players' throats like Happy Gilmore did in that.
Which is commendable. I mean, hopefully we don't get any of that. I feel like the Bulls have had enough violence already in this young season. We don't need any ice skate stabbings going on the basketball court. Still, though.
I'll drop this little last tidbit. So to go with that conspiracy theory, I figure he throws Jerry and Grant out just because he knows he's bad, plays to the factor of losing games, plays to the factor of it doesn't throw any of the chemistry off of any guys that they do have starting out there, or possibly create bad chemistry with, I don't know. There's just a lot of different things that you could think about if Fred Hoiberg was doing this and saying, you know, I don't think Chris Dunn's a point guard of the future, so why? You know, that's just a crazy conspiracy. Like, that, there's a very small chance that happened.
Just doesn't make it. I mean, did you see the baseline take he had for that double clutch dunk?
Oh, yeah.
In their game on Sunday, he's clearly more athletic than Grant. He's a better defender than Grant. He had a couple of nice jumpers, which obviously we all know is his biggest problem right now, that and the turnovers. It's like, unless Hoiberg is so pissed off about his assist turnover ratio, like, that to me can be the only reason. And I don't know if you're losing a bunch of games anyway, that should be a reason. Look, don't get me wrong. That turnover he had late against Phoenix was bad. It was an awful head-scratching turnover. But other than that, he's better than Grant.
Absolutely.
Let him play more minutes. And I mean, he did. Like, Grant started and played 21 on Sunday. Dunn came off the bench and played 27.
That's what's strange, too. It's like every game that, even though Jerry Grant is starting, he's playing less minutes than Chris Dunn ever since Chris Dunn has come back from that injury. So it's not like, and I'm not saying, like, I don't think Chris Dunn's a future point guard, because I still think the jury's still out on that, on the fact that I got to see at least a full season. I got to see at least two full seasons of what his development is and what they're going to do with him. So, and like you said, there have been flashes of really good stuff from Chris Dunn, especially this weekend. Like, in the Hornets game, he played well. And even like we said with the four turnovers, he played well against the Suns. So it's drastically better than his rookie year, which we also have to put in comparison. What he's doing right now in the small sample size is a hell of a lot better than what he was doing under Tom Thibodeau in his rookie season. So you got to commend some type of development, some type of letting the guy go out there and showcase his skills. Chris Dunn showing us that, hey, you know what? Maybe there is something there. But yeah, the Jerry and Grant starting over Dunn, I still am clueless on that. That was the only possible reason I could really come up with, the fact that he's still sitting on the bench while Jerry Grant's starting day in and day out.
Yeah, just, you know, to give a quick numerical comparison, as you mentioned, his rookie season, and he only averaged 17 minutes as a rookie under Tom Thibodeau, Tibbs' first season in Minnesota, but 37% overall from the field and 28.8% from downtown as a rookie. This season, 43.3% overall and 36% from downtown. So significant increases, both overall field goal percentage and 3-point percentage from Chris Dunn.
Gotta like it. Gotta like it. And you know what? They're still losing. You know, as good of an effort as they did push, and like you said, that the Bulls had a chance, had multiple opportunities to win that game on Sunday. They lost. I'm cool with it. Like, as long as I saw a lot of good things, I'm cool with it. I'm cool with them losing because, frankly, like I said, and like I'll continue to state over the entire season, they need to get a top three pick. They need to have that chance to get that top three pick.
Honestly, I mean, that's the same justification I had after a disappointing Bears loss, to kind of come full circle here for all of our all Chicago fans out there. Be sure, as a reminder, go check out Locked On Bears, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We saw Mitchell Trubisky, a rookie, give the Bears a chance to come back and tie that game, send it to overtime. You know, ran a little two-minute drill, gets the Bears down the field in field goal position. Connor Barth, sayonara, peace out, thanks for nothing, shanks that field goal by a mile. So the Bears lose, drop to 3-7, improve their chances on a higher draft pick in the 2018 NFL draft to give Mitch Trubisky, hopefully, another offensive weapon. But you still saw the rookie make strides, play and come up big in big moments in the fourth quarter. Player development of the young guys that the team is trying to build around. Whether you're talking about the Bulls, you're talking about the Bears, seeing those positive moments, those positive flashes, and getting a losing result is honestly the best possible outcome.
Before we get out of here, I want to toss some tidbits at you real fast. Just a couple other things that have happened over these two games and some stuff from the broadcast that I did catch. So one, who does TJ Warren think he is trying to go up against Robin Lopez? Get out of here with that trash. Robin Lopez will take you down. He doesn't want any part of Robin Lopez in that game, where TJ Warren thought like Robin Lopez intentionally hit him in the head on the drive down when the Bulls were on offense and came back on defense, just went straight at Robin Lopez. And then Robin Lopez gave him that look, and literally you could see him mouthing the words like, what the fuck was that, man? What the fuck was that, man? It was funny. It's like, you don't want any part of Robin Lopez.
Rolo is not a dirty player. There are plenty of dirty players in the NBA. Robin Lopez is not one of them. He's a well-liked guy. Basically, yeah, he's gotten in a few scuffles over the course of his NBA career. Who hasn't? Really, unless you're wearing a mascot's uniform, you have nothing to worry about when it comes to Robin Lopez. Yeah, he'll throw down. He'll throw some hard punches if you're a mascot. But NBA players, like, no.
Yeah, he's not pulling a Bobby Portis on anybody.
No,
so
absolutely not.
Stacey King did back him up on that, too. And speaking of Stacey King, I don't listen to a whole lot of Bulls broadcasts on TV. If I'm watching the game, I'll usually mute it while I'm doing things, just kind of watch. But I did get a chance to listen to some of the Stacey King of what he was talking about with the Hornets game and the Suns game. And I was very surprised at what he was doing over the course of this weekend, just talking about the Bulls. And he was going after the Bulls, specifically the point guard play. And guys, and I don't know if it's in a testament to what Fred has been doing and him kind of grilling Fred, but there was multiple times, especially in the Suns game, there's multiple times when he had the producers run back clips of the Bulls. For example, the Bulls had a 4-on-2 in that Suns game. And as they're coming down, everybody stops at the three-point line. Denzel Valentine chucks up a three-pointer. And this was when the game was within like two possessions. Denzel Valentine stops, pulls up for a three, misses brick, and it goes to the Suns. And then Stacey King's like, you can't stop on that fast break. He was grilling the Bulls.
Right there, they have four guys, actually one against one, with a trail guy, Chris. Now, get out wide, Denzel. Get out wide, Jaren Grant. Run right down the middle of the lane, Mari Markkanen, and this is a dunk. Go ahead and roll it. Now watch the Bulls as they come down. They slow down, freeze it. Everybody stops at the three-point line. You cannot do this when you have numbers like this and settle for this shot. You just can't do it. You've got to get dunked, you've got to get layups, or you've got to get fouled. That is too easy of a shot. It's a bailout shot there. And again, they've got to get better at that.
For what we've seen over the course of what, a decade or so of Bulls basketball, and just kind of the broadcasters have to adjust to a rebuild too. And for once in a very long time, Stacey King is going after guys for not playing up to the level of competition, not doing simple basketball things that make your team better. And you know what? I've got to applaud Stacey King for that. I mean, as much as he does work for the Bulls in some capacity and has to be objective in his calls and sort of play to the Bulls fandom, he did give the Bulls and Bulls fans very great snippets of real basketball improvement that the Bulls are not making. And over the course of two games, I thought it was just awesome.
Look, I think Neil and Stacy have kind of a cult following among, no offense, but less informed Bulls fans. Bulls fans who just kind of watch.
A casual Bulls fan.
A casual Bulls fan, sure. Let's call it that. Let's say it that way. But if you really pay attention, Stacey King tends to be a homer broadcaster. And you get that a lot. The local broadcasts, whether it's Chicago or any other market, hometown broadcasters tend to be a little biased. Stacey King, on the other hand, not only does that, but also has a tendency to not really know the X's and O's of what the Bulls should be trying to do. You know, his favorite thing to talk about is like, oh, you know, the Bulls should be feeding Robin Lopez down low on a, you know, every possession. You gotta, you know, like free cheese and all that kind of stuff. It's like, dude, do you know what Fred Hoiberg's trying to run? Do you not know? So I'm encouraged to see Stacey King calling out the Bulls for bullshit play, because we don't really see much of that. And look, to have a hometown kind of broadcaster is fun and entertaining when the team is good. Like, I'm pretty sure all Bulls fans, whether they were a casual fan, a diehard fan, an obsessed, you know, stat-driven fan, back in the days of the D. Rose Joakim Bulls, everybody loves Stacey. All the catchphrases, Kyle Korver, give me the hot sauce.
There he goes again, and then gun back Korver for three.
Omer Asik, Asik and Destroy. And of course, D. Rose, too big, too strong, too fast, too good.
Stop it! Stop it! Did not do him like that! What are you doing, Dragic? Did you not get the memo? Derrick Rose can go upstairs.
Windy City Assassin, do you not know who this kid is? He's from Chicago. Look, everybody loved, people fell in love with Stacey King.
Rose crosses over the fadeaway.
Got it. I missed it back and kissed myself.
Oh my
MVP
gosh, it's
time.
Over.
Windy City Assassin does it again.
Even a younger generation of Bulls fans who maybe didn't remember the fact that he played on those early title teams, the first three-peat. And Stacey was popular. But I think Bulls fans, the more they pay attention to his commentary, the more they figure out, wait, Stacey doesn't necessarily always know what he's talking about. And he's kind of annoyingly a homer.
And I'll have to keep, I'll have to keep a monitor on that too, because I for the most part, what you've said, I agree with. And in terms of like, in terms of what the Bulls have done on the court, as far as product, they've been competitive for a long time since Stacey King's been in the broadcast. That's what I'm saying. It's like Stacey King and Neil Funk almost have to figure out a way of how to broadcast a rebuild, because it's different than broadcasting a team that's competitive or a team that's fighting for a championship or has star players and all of that. And this team doesn't. So you have to kind of shift your broadcast in a way to make it a little bit more understanding. And the things like you were saying, where like feed Robin Lopez types of things, like, yeah, obviously, if the Bulls were trying to win games, they're going to feed the guy that is the most competent player on the floor. But to see over the weekend, it just like little small tidbits of Stacey King saying, you know what, I'm kind of fed up watching shitty basketball and kind of having to play the positive spin towards it. I'm just going to go in on things that I clearly can see and any competent NBA fan can see. And it's good for him to put that on the broadcast too, because the casual Bulls fan doesn't catch things like that. Doesn't catch 4-on-2 breaks where Denzel Valentine pulls up for a three. And Denzel Valentine was a little bit open, but he wasn't crazy open. And people like the casual Bulls fan, casual NBA fan, casual basketball fan don't catch that. And I think that's where kind of maybe we'll see a transformation of the broadcast there and some of Stacey King's analysis. But I thought for the weekend, and sort of a transition from watching it, I thought it was pretty decent, the things that he was calling out. And I'm glad that he's at least, it sounds like in the broadcast, he's a little bit fed up with what's going on.
Yeah, and for those casual fans, you want them to learn something from the broadcast team, right?
Absolutely.
As, you know, when they go back and break down plays with the replay cam, and he's got his, you know, yellow marker on the teleprompter and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, you want to be able to say, thanks, broadcast team, I learned something when you broke down that play and what happened. And that hasn't necessarily always been the case when it comes to Stacey, in my opinion. And I know the guy had a long and arguably successful NBA career. He's charming. You can't deny the fact that he's a charming guy to listen to, but sometimes you wish he was a little more on point with the basketball analytics, because it's easy to listen to him and enjoy him and chuckle at his nicknames and his catchphrases when the Bulls are winning. But when the Bulls are this bad, You want him to call it like it is. And it sounds like, you know, for the last couple of games anyway, we finally started to get that from Stacey.
Woo! The golden pipes are back! If you ever interrupt me again, I'm going to smack you.
Well, we're running way late here, so that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember that catch us tomorrow with a brand new episode. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show at iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and we are trying to get the show as early as next week onto Spotify for those listeners. We did have a couple questions about that, about being on Spotify, so we will try to get there as soon as possible for those listeners. Make sure to go and enter the contest for the Lowry Market in Jersey. Tomorrow we will announce the winner, so make sure you're checking your Twitter DMs, Facebook, Gmail if we do contact you in that way. So make sure to look out for that and listen tomorrow's show to see if you're possibly the winner. Live on Dash Radio tomorrow as well, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. DashRadio.com, Dash Radio app. Always live on the Nothing But Net channel. For Jordan and Matt, we will see you tomorrow.